Welcome to Rooted Recovery Stories. My name is Patrick Custer and I'm your host. So glad that you're here. And I'm so glad to be here in the Hollywood Hills with my friend Corey O'Brien, the multi-talented performer, entertainer, all the things.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
This is going to be an awesome, you know, I have to ask you because there's a theme here. Is this your first time coming on a podcast?
This is not my first time on a podcast.
Okay.
But I feel like this will be my first time probably going deep about my recovery, sobriety.
Sure. Talking.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Which it's been a minute. So, it's an honor to have you on, you know, sharing this, journey with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So, where are you originally from?
I grew up in Pennsylvania, Chester Springs, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So it was, really interesting, very conservative, very small town. Mm-hmm. So I really didn't fit in with anyone or have like my, you know, my group. So I, it was tough for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you say tough, what, like, how did that manifest for you?
Oh, you know, I think at an early age, like I felt wrong in all aspects, with my sexuality or with just the things that I enjoyed doing. I saw no other boys my age doing it. So I always felt like there was something wrong with me. I think that instead of embracing that at a young age, I really started shying away from it. I really felt like, I was tainted in a way.
Sure.
So it manifested in a lot of like self-doubt, a lot of hatred for myself. And then it just kind of spiraled as I got older. I learned how to, in a sense, like treat myself worse and worse as I got older.
Was that, so, you know, we always talk about the nature versus nurture. So like environment versus the biology, or your genetics. Yeah. So the environment that you were around, as you've been kind of talking about, we know kids can be bullies and what have you, especially, you know, growing up as a gay kid myself, I understand that perspective. Did you experience or face any type of, friction with family members or your primary support system, when it comes to,
My family was so supportive.
Yeah.
They were incredibly supportive. I just learned that the opinions and voices of my peers were more important to me because that is what I surrounded myself with day in and day out, with school and just wanting friends. So coming home, I did feel like that's where I could really be myself. I could perform, I could dance, but at school, I also wanted to be accepted. And so coming home every day and having my family tell me that they loved me, of course it felt good, but at 8, 9, 10, I just wanted my peers to also love me. Yeah. And, that's when I really just, it was weird. Cause I felt like I was excelling at the things that I loved, but inside it was just getting worse and worse. Like I really was feeling like I was, doing all these things, adding all these things to my plate to accomplish a million things because I didn't like who I was.
What were the, so clearly becoming performance based, whether it's like, I already know the, you know, like whether you're talking about like doing theater or doing like whatever we're performing in society as well, because just to find safety.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What were the kinds of things though, that you were, if we're talking about the achievement,
I started,
you were seeking,
I started as a gymnast when I was a kid. Yeah. I loved it. I started training for the Junior Olympics. And then some boys found out that I was a gymnast. And I did everything in my power to just not be noticed, like not be made fun of. So I quit. Like I gave up something that I worked so hard for because I just wanted to fit in. But I was a kid that had so much energy and I wanted to, I was meant to be on stage. So I was like, okay, what's the next best thing? And I tried a dance class and I fell in love with it. And then it took off.
How old were you then?
I want to say like around 8 or 9 years old.
Okay.
It's been like the main consistent thing that I've always loved. It's never changed really for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you get negative, positive feedback once you started into that arena?
To be honest, I really don't even remember. Like I just threw myself into it.
Oh yeah.
I really didn't think about what other people were saying because I was so enamored with all of it. I was so busy with it. Like it was something that I did 7 days a week. Like I really, I'm an all or nothing person.
No.
So it really, it took over, but I really don't remember whether my family was always supportive. I can say my family always supportive.
That's great.
Yeah.
So when did, when did you find, performance can be a medicating behavior, obviously, right? Like, so, but when did you, get to a place where you started, you know, to use behaviors of any kind? Was it drinking first?
Yeah. I started when I was 12.
Wow.
I had a girlfriend at the time who introduced me to drinking and drugs, and she was like, kind of in a sense, she was my saving grace from getting made fun of, because she was cool. And if I spent time with her, if I dated her, then people, you know, wouldn't make fun of me. And
did she know? Was she like,
everyone knew, like, like it was very, she didn't know. We didn't, like, we actually were in a relationship, but I mean, now knowing that she is a lesbian, I mean, we knew like what it was, but she introduced me to it. I actually was so scared the first time I drank, because I heard all these crazy things, and I was like, I think, you know, when I get drunk, I'll probably tell people I'm gay. It's probably like, I thought things actually were going to come out of me that I couldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've said it before, honestly, tasting alcohol for the first time for me was like tasting freedom. Like I really felt like I found what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And then that really, that became, in my eyes, my first love. That was really what, that took control of everything.
Right.
Yeah. And so it just, from 12 on, it just really took a life of its own.
Was it like a soft peace and comfort, safety that you found, or did you get like obliterated the first time?
Yeah. Completely obliterated.
Really?
Yeah. The first time. And I will say, that was my drinking. Yeah,
from the beginning.
Yeah, I didn't understand soft peace. Even today, being 32, when my friends tell me, "Oh, yeah, last night I was drunk and I was with it," I'm like, "No, you weren't. Like, we were talking.
Yeah,
we were having a conversation." And like, "Yeah, but I was drunk." That was never my drunk. I couldn't form sentences, but I thought that that's what drinking was. So yeah, for me, I never experienced a peace. I never experienced. I thought buzz was sobriety. Does that make sense? Like, yes. I thought drunk was sobriety. Like, oh, yeah. It was, but that was, in a sense, that was my piece, because I was able to get out of myself and not feel anything.
Yeah. So, gosh, you know, we talk about it's fun until it's not fun anymore. two questions. I guess the first one I want to know is, did that immediately start interfering with your like proceeding through your dance career?
Because I fell in love with using. So it just took, everything else took a back seat. So I would push things off. Okay, well, today, you know, I won't go train, or today I won't go to dance, but I will tomorrow, I will the next day, you know. And it always just keeps, I always start making these promises to myself. I think I was able to start so young and then get away with it so much because I was disguising it as finally making friends, finally having acceptance. So my family wanted that for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really was able to just kind of go down this path of destruction so early on.
Yeah.
But I did get sent away at different ages before finally really going to rehab. So like, I mean, they caught on.
When you say sent away, did you mean like boarding school?
In eighth grade, I was sent away to live with my grandma.
Okay.
Because I was, you know, I was using, and they were just like, we can't deal with
grandma, this. Fix it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Grandma loves me. Mm-hmm. She loved me. I was her favorite. So she didn't really fix anything. Right. She kind of really much let me get away with everything.
Of course.
And then I was sent to rehab for the first time when I was 16. So
what was that experience like for you?
It was interesting. I think that we should have different organizations and different rehabs and different treatment centers for all ages. Mm-hmm. It was interesting because I was the only child in a facility of all adults. So I didn't really feel, you know, like
you were in treatment with people over 18?
Yeah, my roommate was 36.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was, I didn't really get much from it.
No, see, you almost don't even need to say anymore. I totally get it. Like, I think that there might be, I don't know if it's state or federal regulations now that prohibit that from.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. Being somebody who works in a treatment corporation, like I'm like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. They go over a list of things that like we, in the beginning, like with my dad, like what I didn't want to talk about or like things that like just weren't. And like my dad like signs off on it and then they talked about it. So it just wasn't that experience for me. It scared me straight. I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
I got back and I never wanted to go to a place like that again.
So what happened from there with your, I mean, like how long were you sober?
I was like 16. I want to say I was like sober until I was like 18. And when I say sober, I mean, I was doing great. Uh-huh. I threw myself back into dance.
Yeah.
And I came out before that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I really found, like I said, I found this newfound confidence and I was just ready to like, really, I wanted to make everyone proud. And at 18, I decided not to go to college for dance. I kind of wanted to like just find myself and I found myself back to alcohol and and that's really when I hit the ground running. I call that like the beginning of my end, even though it was 2 or 3 years until it really ended. But
So were you dancing at all through that period of time?
Yeah. So that's actually, I graduated high school. I moved to New York City and I did a dance program there. And, I remember like not even knowing if I was going to finish the dance program because I just would miss so many days and, the alcohol store delivered to me and it didn't card. And I just was for the first time ever living on my own, able to just drink all day.
In isolation, you were by yourself drinking.
Completely by myself. I found so much joy in being by myself. I honestly, at times I found so much confidence in it. Like I would just talk to myself. I was doing things because I would go, there were days that I would go without speaking to people. So I really I just had this false sense of confidence because I was so fucked up.
Oh, wow.
I was just completely, in a sense, taken away from society. Like I just didn't, but I felt like that was like the safest thing for me. I felt
right.
Cause I just couldn't. I just.
Right. I mean, no, it makes sense. Those of us who like, we get to a place where isolation is the only place that we can find safety because the closer we are to people, the more they're going to see. And you can't have that because the addiction is going to win out and survive at all costs. I mean, you know, so I'm curious, like when you relapsed, was it alcohol and drugs or was it just alcohol?
It was always alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I had, this idea that if I kept it at alcohol, that I didn't have a problem.
Of course.
Yeah. So it was very much like I would drink and then I would wake up the next day and I would just remind myself, I only drank last night. Like I was so proud. Like, okay, there we go. But it was never just that. Like, you know, the second I get completely hammered, then I find out what I, you know, did or I end up finding out who I called or anything, you know?
Sure.
And so it just really spirals. But as my addiction was just ramping up, so was my career. I was still dancing. So I went on tour and I worked on a cruise ship. I moved to Israel and Spain and Brazil. I was doing different touring shows, and it just was getting worse and worse and worse. Like I got fired from every single job for my addiction. So I would be in Brazil, and then I was supposed to be there for 6 months, and I would get sent home after a month, and I would have to explain to my family why I'm coming back early and make up lies. It was always lies. Yeah, yeah, it was always lies.
You. Was it the truth, or did you?
Never. Like the time that my family all came to the cruise ship to watch me perform, and I actually got fired on the same day they were coming on.
No.
But I lied until my dad really pretty much forced this company to tell him that I was, yeah.
That you were leaving on your own accord.
Because I was fired for drinking. Yeah, yeah. They straight up told him.
Oh.
Yeah, he tried to get a refund because he was only coming to see me. And
wow.
Finally, they were like, enough is enough. Like, we fired your son because. So, yeah, it got to a point where I was doing a dance show in Israel for a year and a half. And I was sent home after 25 days. So,
wow.
And they told my family that he needs to get help. I promised them. I begged my managers in Israel to please let me perform. I told them I would go to AA there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already, they put me on a drinking ban after 3 days of me being there. So they already saw it.
Right.
3 days they saw it. So, I didn't listen, but I begged them, please. If you let me stay here, I will go to AA. And they asked me what AA was.
Oh God.
So in my heart, I knew it got to a point where I was like, this is done.
Yep.
Like it's just, done. It's so,
you were just waiting till the hammer fell and
in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So gosh, what was that like? The only thing I can identify with that, I mean, I shouldn't say the only thing, but professional wise, like I understand like finding value in the career aspect or, you know, what you're like working towards and whatnot. I didn't have the repeated like over and over and over. I had one and I was like, I lived out a lie for like 9 months until my family finally found out. I'd been dropped from a medical program and yeah. So, but I kept going to school. I'm doing air quotes, everybody. so yeah, faking it. I mean, like I can really relate to that whole story of, you know, being dropped from something that brings you your value and your hope for the future and not being able to like face your family, face it yourself. Were you able to face it yourself? What was it? What was that internal dialogue you were telling yourself at this time regarding?
I mean, I still have, and I look back and I still have all my journals from that time. I still was writing. Still was documenting everything. And I just felt like I failed at everything. But I think that I was more disappointed because I knew I wasn't going to stop. Like I just tried to find different ways to hide it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to.
There was no plan for like, absolutely I'm going to exert my willpower. There will be an end.
Yeah. If someone told me right then and there that I had to either decide between alcohol or my life, I would say alcohol. Like I really was not going to stop at all. There was nothing about it. I trusted, I thanked, I loved alcohol for everything that it did for me. Because I felt like it was why I could get up every single day and just face life. But it literally took everything that I worked so hard for in my life away from me. And I didn't realize it.
So Israel happened.
Yeah.
And when you got back, what happened after that?
Right on a plane to rehab. Yeah. Yeah, for 30 days.
Yeah.
Well, they say 28.
Right.
Yeah. I was there for a year, so.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't the, my parents said 30 days. I said, I will do 28, not even 30.
Isn't it funny how we start negotiating when you're talking about how like, I would have chosen debt, I would have chosen alcohol over.
My life, yeah. But 2 days more in rehab seems like hell. Like I was like, it's gonna be the worst. my sister flew with me to Florida to bring me there. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting on the plane telling her, I want you to know that I love you. I'm only doing this for the family. I don't plan on stopping. I don't think I have a problem and I'm not going to stop. And I remember her just putting on her sunglasses and crying because she basically was like, then what are we doing here?
Right.
I will say my experience with rehab, like the first 28, they fucking got me. Like they felt like vacation. Like I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then they were like, do you want to do another 30? And I was like, yes. Little did I know it was already paid full for 4 months already. So they got it. They were just letting it make it feel like it was my decision.
Right. That's the best way to get alcohol to do something.
They got me. I don't feel like we started doing the hard work until honestly like 60, 90 days in. Cause they had me open. I wasn't speaking. Like I was saying I was good.
Right.
And then I feel like things just started really kind of falling apart in there. I started like realizing like
the layers of the onion peeled back and
the insane things that I did, like the way that I treated myself. This mindset that, you know, I growing up, like how badly maybe I was treated by my peers, but that I treated myself worse than anyone has ever treated me. And the things that I did to myself, I not only was it like self-sabotage, but I had a lot of anger, I think, to the world, to other people, but that manifested in like that, that ended up, I took that out on myself, mm-hmm. whether it be like physically or emotionally, like and I thought that was normal. Like that was my norm. Rehab was such an experience.
Right. You found out that you thought that was your norm and they pulled it out and they were like, this isn't right. Like,
Like the things that I would just speak about honestly today too. And that is why comedy has become such an important part of my life. Why now that it's like my number one thing is because when I have conversations with people, even now, when I mention about things that from my past or things that I've done, I there's so much humor behind it, but people are like, no, babe, like that's not normal. Like I realized, oh yeah. Like the chaos to me was
right.
Normal. Yeah.
I can relate. I can relate.
Yeah.
Wow. So, when was that? How long ago was that you went to treatment?
October 1st, 2012, 10 plus years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been able to stay sober since then? Yeah,
completely.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What a beautiful miracle sobriety is, and the gift of healing and all the ways of just dealing with the underlying issues. Was therapy part of your journey as well?
Yeah. Therapy completely.
Yeah.
I actually had two different therapists while I was in rehab.
Great.
Yeah. I needed it all. So I had two different therapists and, and then therapy outside mm-hmm. of it. I will say like my recovery, journey has always looked different. Everyone is, when I got out of treatment, I did a lot of AA because sobriety became it's just my life. Mm-hmm. Like I am sober. It's a part of me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say like, I don't want to put it out there cause I know temptation is different for everyone, but I'm not tempted. I was never really tempted over the past 10 years because I always just reminded myself how I felt before.
Sure.
And and then I watched addiction just take over other people's lives in my family. So while I was sober, I was watching it happen to them, and it was the last thing that I really
I'm glad that you brought that up, because normally I ask this question earlier, but it falls where it needs to. So how has addiction manifested itself in your family? And, you know, at what point was that? Like, did you know what addiction was as a child before you found yourself in the middle of it? Was it a narrative that, like, you had already been invited into, or was this all new once you found yourself smack dab in the middle of it?
So I didn't really know what addiction was when I wasn't, no, I didn't learn about addiction per se with like alcohol and drugs. If people meet me now and they haven't seen me in forever since I was a kid and I told them that I was an addict, they would not be surprised. Like my behavior, I was extremely obsessive. So if I love something, still to this day, I will do 100, I will give it 110%. Mm. And alcohol and drugs just fell into that.
Right.
Because I felt like alcohol and drugs loved me. Like it made me love myself. That's what I felt.
Well, they do until they
until they absolutely made me hate who I was.
Right.
Oof. Yeah.
So moving forward to when you were sober and you saw like the other family members, you know, not to share their whatever, you know, cause that's their story to tell. But what, how did that affect you? You know, dealing with that as a sober person. I mean, like, you know, we talk about so much of like, you know, getting sober, there's this process of us thinking like, well, once I get sober, once I decide to accept sobriety, there's this little part of our brain for most of us that is like, well, if I say yes to sobriety, then life will be fixed and all will be okay. Yeah. Like the problem that is me, the problem is Patrick, or the problem is Corey, will be done. Like, so there won't be any more problems, right? Like, but what we come to find out is that no, it just equips us to like actually deal with problems like on life's terms. And so what was that like for you navigating that sober? That's a big, big one for everybody.
No, yeah. I actually just had this conversation a couple of days ago because I felt like I was really angry because I missed out on spending time and really embracing my loved ones because they started focusing on someone else. And I understood because I started focusing on them too, but I just was like, oh, okay. Yeah, it was like that. I got sober and then after a year I walked out of rehab and I was like, my life is completely changed. Like I'm going to, and then I just realized like everyone was focused on someone else.
Oh, it was that quick.
Oh, completely. Yeah. I mean, it really honestly started happening even before I went to rehab, but we were all focused on my fuck ups. So
it
happened so quick to the point that, I mean, that was 10 years. I haven't been back home. Yeah, I flew home from rehab. I spent a few days there and then I moved to LA.
Wow.
Yeah, and then just been dancing and working sober ever since in different states. But yeah, I just was like, I'm not going to surround myself with this because it has been my life the past 10 years.
Right.
It's just.
Well, it's a beautiful thing when you talk about some of the literature in our 12-step communities talks about a community will be built up around you. And, you know, you've mentioned that yourself, it like became your life in the good ways. And it's so beautiful when we get to have that chosen family that, you know, comes around us and supports us. I'm curious how that, you talk about having a positive family support system. Yeah. Early on, what has that looked like since not going home? Like so over this past 10 years, if you were here, what's that dynamic?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I say like, I didn't go home, like I didn't move back there. Uh-huh. I visited, I've seen my family. I've seen my loved ones. I just, I didn't want to get sucked into anything. And that could happen with any family, any loved one. I didn't want to get drawn back into any type of chaos because I wasn't strong enough to deal with it. And honestly, even if I was, it's not my place to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So for me, like I think because chaos was something that I was so used to, I would be having a wonderful day, a wonderful week, a wonderful month. And I would throw myself into, I can handle it. I can handle this. And I would throw myself into issues that were not my issues.
Yeah.
And I would then find myself in bed for 4 days because I couldn't, no one should be able, I can't deal with it.
Yeah.
I can't, that's not my issue to deal with. So, I mean, the thing about my family is that they always are supportive and want me to care for me. Mm. That's really all that it is. And I think now more than ever, like it's taken me 32 years, but I love people and I meet them where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
I've wanted people to get where I'm at. I've wanted people to see things the way that I see things. Not only my family, but this world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always the case. So as long as I'm given respect, then, you know, I'll meet you where you're at.
Yeah.
And I'll love you from there.
The beautiful thing about that, I think, is that like until we do our own work and start on that journey, we can't like do what you're talking about and meet people where they're at.
Yeah. You know, no, it took
like, it. Can't, and
I think this was honestly a pandemic thing. Like, yeah. I it took me, I mean, cause like the pandemic, we were inside. Like all I did was think, you know, like I really just had myself. I was able to create art, but like there was also many people had it worse. I'm just saying that it was, I just started thinking about things that I wasn't giving time to think about before.
Right. I think that a lot of us could say that. I mean, the pandemic, for those of us who made it through, you know, like was this pressure cooker of many different things, whether it was creativity or
whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had to take a break for myself. Mm-hmm. I had to, from literally everyone.
Yeah.
I had to, yeah.
When you found out that you enjoyed making people laugh?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah. Honestly, the pandemic I just want to be true to myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, I feel like my whole entire life, I spent years just wanting to be accepted.
Mm.
So even when I was already living my truth as a gay man, as a sober man, I was still doing things that I was just like, that I just felt like I needed to do, that that was going to have people accept me or love me. And
yeah.
I was caring too much, I think. And I was wanting people to care about aspects of me that really, are just parts of me. Like, that will go away as I age. That will, you know, like it wasn't real. There was no feelings behind it. I just thought that I was basing a lot of my self-worth off of, people loving me for things that I didn't even love myself for.
Mm.
So yeah, I think that I just got to a place where like I was looking to laugh.
Yeah.
I was looking to have fun. I was looking to,
can I ask you before we go there? What can you dive just a little bit further into like, what was it that you, those things that were temporary that you, or like a thing, you know,
yeah,
that you're
talking
about that fades away, that wasn't important.
Yeah. I think that, well, I never really understood love as I was growing up because I never had any love to, I never had anything to base love off of with, I never saw two boys in love when I was a kid. I never saw two men in love when I was a kid. I growing up, I remember thinking that like I was, not only was I different, but like there was, I was going to be like a quote unquote weird person. Like I was like, oh, I meant to just grow up by myself. Like I really, when I started this attraction to boys, I was scared to tell people that because they weren't going to accept me, but because like I really thought that I love wasn't a thing for me.
You saw isolation in your future from a young age.
Yeah, like I thought that that's what it, because I'm like, if I don't end up like, because I thought that that's all that it was.
Right.
So as I got older, I learned that a lot of, I was looking for acceptance from men that I really just wanted to, I wanted to feel love as I got older. And I think that people that everyone has issues. And I think that everyone has, their own demons. And I feel like sometimes when you haven't healed those demons, you can take advantage of people that, are working on
their own stuff.
Yeah. So I think
like that, a puzzle piece for sure.
Yeah. So I think that I felt like I was going to learn from people that maybe have been through it before me or have had years on me, when in reality it was just more so, that I was just young and dumb.
Yeah.
So I just, it was.
No, I think you spelled it out perfectly. That makes all the sense in the world. So, you know, going from that like form of despair, I guess, because it is a form of despair. I mean, even after, you know, sobriety.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Moving into, you know, you started to talk about the comedy. So we go through pandemic. You're like, this is something I'm enjoying. Mm-hmm. I love connecting with people. Mm-hmm. So like, what was the next step of like flushing that out? Were you just like writing material? Like where did,
oh,
you know?
Yeah. So I can, full transparency. No, I've been creating a lot of videos and doing different skits and recreations on social media. But with my comedy show that I just did, that you attended, I wrote that in 3 weeks.
No way.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
Thank you. I mean, I really just also find so much humor in a lot of crazy thing that's happened in my life. So even when I read it back to like my family afterwards, they were like, oh yeah, but that's true. I'm like, well, that's what... This is what, yeah, this is what, because for years, this is also stuff that I did cry about. This is stuff that I hated myself for. And then I think that I know that I found this love and acceptance for myself. And I also just realized that life is so fucking short that I was like, I really am worrying about what this fucking random person thinks about me, when in reality, like, I'm trying to bend backwards for this random Joe that I will never see again, but I'm just treating myself like absolute shit. It got to a point where I was just like, this is not for me. And it's not for a lot of people. And it also like, you kind of like, once you kind of see this clarity, you see life through such a different, like different eyes. You're like, oh, the people that I also was trying to be like, don't even want to be like that. It's just like it's a snowball effect. And so for me, selfishly, it wasn't even about other people. Like, I just wanted to do what made me happy. Like, I wanted to make myself laugh.
That's healing, right?
Yeah.
There.
Like, I wanted to create. I wanted to be funny. I wanted to be stupid. I want to wake up every day and for my life be able to fucking throw on a wig and different costumes and create TikTok videos. And that's not for anyone else but me. But then I think living in my truth and being true to who I am. That's actually what took my career to the next level. And that was exciting.
Well, it's when you start, you come into alignment with like identifying who you are and what you like and unapologetically presenting yourself to the world and owning it. Right. Yeah, and it's so apparent even before I met you, like through the medium of, you know, the internet, like that was the case. And then I got to see it in person here in Hollywood the other night, which was so awesome. It was called Corey's First Time. And so there was a multi level theme there, and it was great.
Thank you.
I don't know if is the whole thing going to be out on some point.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah. Very cool. But it was really great. It was a really fun evening and an honor to be there for your first, I hope the first of many.
Absolutely.
That your journey is going to be on. And so, you know, in, as we kind of reach the end of our episode, I want to ask you about what is, taking care of yourself look like today?
Being honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Putting myself first. I think that sometimes I forget where I come from and what I've been through. So I always kind of like double down and ask myself, like, is my life bad or am I having a bad day? Because I really can get on such a spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And just like I said, with being honest, like I, for many years, like I just ignored different things that doctors told me. I ignored like depression diagnosis. I ignored anxiety. I ignored all of that. I did the easy things like take my meds, but I just was like completely unaware of like why I would spiral for days or why I wouldn't be able to get out of bed for days. And this is happening in my sobriety.
Right.
Like it was,
oh yeah. Cause you're feeling things fine.
Yeah. Like people, that's another thing too. Like I remember there was a time when I told my family, I think I need to go back to rehab, and my dad lost it. Cause he was like, okay, well, like I thought you were good. You relapse. I didn't relapse. I didn't, like, I think I need help. Like, cause I can't deal with these emotions and feelings, but it's actually, I just realized I was adding so much to my plate so I wouldn't deal with it. Mm-hmm. And then finally they just came crashing down. So talking to people, because I do a wonderful job at holding everything in.
Yeah.
So just making sure that I take everything that I have, that I've learned, and take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know. I lived in such solitude for so long. I don't ever want to go back there.
So today you're in a different place of like actually connecting and staying yeah. out of the cave of isolation.
Yeah. I used to like, wonder even in sobriety at times, like I was like, why like, don't I have many friends? Why don't I talk to people? Why don't mm-hmm. I go out? Like it was like these own thoughts in my mind that mm-hmm. was stopping me from it. And then I literally, just like with everything, with my career, with my confidence, I honestly got to a point where it was like, I don't care.
Right.
I just want to be myself. Like I really want to just do the things that make me happy. And that's when the right people came around, the right opportunities came around. And most importantly, the love for myself just honestly felt like it came out of nowhere. But I see that over time I was just working towards that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. I love to hear that. It's funny. And I mean funny, ironic, not hilarious. because, you know, knowing you the bit that I do, I would have never guessed that you were somebody that leans towards obviously we all lean towards isolation in our most sickest addictions. But just in your natural state, I would have never guessed that you struggled with that. You're such a delightful, bubbly person, you know? And so like it just goes to show, don't judge a book by its cover. Mm-hmm. You know, you never know what the struggle is on the inside or what people have been through. I just know, like, I'm so excited for us to get to share your story on our platform, because, that's a powerful message right there. Anybody who goes, which Corey's stuff's going to be linked on all of our episodes, you're going to go look this up and be like, how on earth could this person have ever had self-doubt and like what felt like they needed to isolate? Like, cause he's just brimming over with like, you know, all of these like funny, like you would just think this is the person everybody wants to be friends with, and he wants to be friends with everybody, you know, and ready to just have the best time. And so I'm glad though that you've come into alignment. You found yourself, you found healing, you found peace. And that's one of the things that is the biggest goal of our show, that we want to help the people that are connecting and tuning in with us to start their journey or encourage them on the path of their journey of finding their authenticity, finding the peace that they need to, finding out who they are, and authentic, genuine connection with other people. And so, you know, for that person or those people that have identified with your story today, I'm curious, like, what would your like closing encouragement that you would like to say to them, those people that have said, gosh, I really identify with his story?
I think what I would say to anyone that identifies with my story or anyone that really is in a place that it feels like that's where they will be forever. Mm. That I've been there, that I've experienced the same feelings that you have, and that not only does life get better, but you feel better. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have this idea of like, okay, well, if I do this, then my life will get better. If I do this, then everything will change. But we kind of ignore at times how we will feel.
Absolutely.
Where we're going to be. I even in sobriety, when I started accomplishing all the things that I wanted to accomplish, I still felt like shit. So I just realized that the most important thing is how I feel about myself, because that is the one constant that I will always have until I leave this earth. And for so long, like I already said, I treated myself so horribly that the most important thing that anyone can do, that anyone can take away from this, is to invest in yourself, invest in taking care of yourself and love yourself, even not when you get to where you want to be, but love yourself right now, because that's how it starts.
That's it right there.
Yeah.
That's gold.
Yeah.
Mm. I love that you're there. I hope you continue on this path. I can't wait to watch you grow and, do more things. Like, you're a thoroughly entertaining individual, and whether I'm in Nashville or out here visiting or on the internet, I'm going to be, you know, following close, and laughing along with you. And I hope more and more people are as well.
Thank you.
So, it's not all laughs though. Today was a lot more serious.
I know you're trying to get me to cry. It's not going to happen. At least not
I was
today.
Trying so hard.
It almost happened twice.
Oh, you man.
You got it.
It's okay. Post edit. We're adding to
it. Yeah. So there you go.
Thank you so much for doing this. This has been a real honor and treat for us. So
thank you so much.
Absolutely. With that, I'm going to close out and remind everybody. Well, first of all, thank you for tuning in. We're so glad you're here. You know, each and every one of you, you're meant to be here. Don't second guess yourself. Mm. You were meant to tune into this episode today. And it's never too late to start loving yourself. And you're only ever one decision away from a completely different life. This podcast is brought to you by Promises Behavioral Health. If you or a loved one are struggling with trauma, addiction, or mental health, we are ready to answer your questions and help you take that next step. Call our admission center at 888-648-4098 or visit us online at www.promises.com. Our team is ready and waiting to answer the call for help.